Open your Bibles with me to 2 Timothy chapter 1. 2 Timothy chapter 1. Let's begin reading in verse 1. To get the context of what I want to call your attention to. Paul, an apostle of Jesus Christ by the will of God, according to the promise of life, which is in Christ Jesus, to Timothy, my dearly beloved son, grace, mercy, and peace from God the Father and Jesus Christ our Lord. I thank God, whom I serve from my forefathers with pure conscience, that without ceasing, I have remembrance of thee in my prayers night and day, greatly desiring to see thee, being mindful of thy tears, that I may be filled with joy. When I call to remembrance, and this is the verse I want to focus on, when I call to remembrance the unfeigned faith that is in thee, which dwelt first in thy grandmother Lois, and in thy mother Eunice, and I am persuaded that in thee also. Notice, before Timothy found the Lord, his mother and grandmother had first found the Lord. Timothy was the son of a Christian mother and an unbelieving pagan father. Timothy did not have a Christian dad, but he did have a Christian mom, and he had a Christian grandmother. And Paul is honoring Timothy's mother and grandmother and giving them the recognition they deserve in the part they played in the faith that Timothy had in his life. So, in addition to that, I will quote the verse that you can turn to it later or now if you want. Ephesians chapter 6, verses 2 and 3. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise. That is the first of the Ten Commandments that has a promise associated with the commandment. And the promise is that it may be well with thee and thou mayest live long on the earth. How we honor our parents is very important in the eyes of God. It's so important that God associated a promise with it. I will give long life to those who will honor their father and their mother, a general promise that God has made, signifying how important it is to the Lord that we honor both our mother and our father. I understand, especially in the current environment in which we live, that not every person in the sound of my voice and not every person in this room had the privilege of being raised by both biological parents and B, by both mom and dad being Christian parents. And it seems that the more our society deteriorates in its moral base, it seems the fewer and fewer children there are that are blessed with having been raised with both biological parents and especially two parents that are Christians. Many of you come from broken homes. Many of you may be like Timothy. You had a Christian mom, but you had a pagan dad. Or maybe you had a Christian dad but a pagan mom. Or maybe you don't even know who your mother and father are. You may have been raised by people that are not your biological parents, but assume that role of being your parent and raised you as their own. You have maybe have come from a variety of different circumstances that would be difficult concerning the upbringing of children. And so I recognize that I'm talking to people, probably the vast majority of whom either were not raised by both biological parents, or if they were, did not have both a Christian mom and a Christian dad. Timothy, 2,000 years ago, was not raised by two parents that were Christians. He did have a Christian mom, and he had a Christian grandma, but he didn't have a Christian dad. I guess that's why Paul calls him my son in the faith. Paul was the closest thing to a dad that Timothy knew. He was certainly his spiritual father and mentor, and they had that kind of a relationship all of Paul's life, and that was a blessing, I'm sure, for both men. I am just thankful, and I can claim no credit, of course, because none of us have a choice as to where and to whom we were born. Can I get an amen on that? We don't have a choice. So all I can do is just thank the Lord and give tribute to my upbringing, that I was born and raised in a home with both my biological mother and father, and in a home where both parents were born again Christians. So I grew up in a Christian home, and I'm very thankful for it. There's no question that most of what I am is because of the influence of my parents. In my many years of ministry, I have occasionally, from time to time, talked a little bit about my father. In fact, over the years, I have brought a message around the theme of honoring my dad. If you've been here for any number of years, I'm sure you've heard me at least in some way, and maybe even in one message. I think I preached a message not too long ago about my dad. I don't know that I have ever preached an entire message in praise of my mother. If I have, I don't remember it, to my embarrassment. So on this Mother's Day, I want to bring praise and honor to my mother. This is the 19th Mother's Day without me being able to say Happy Mom's Day to my mom. She's been in heaven for over 19 years now. Many of you have also lost your mom, and you are not able to call her up on the phone if she doesn't live locally and wish her Happy Mother's Day, or you're not able to see her because she, like my mom, has already gone to heaven. Of course, my dad has as well. He went to heaven 4 years earlier than my mom. So I just want to change the pace of my usual messages on this Mother's Day, and I want to give praise, tribute, and honor to my mother. I want to just kind of go through a simple list of ways that I have chosen to honor her. First of all, my mother is the one who introduced me to Christ. She is the one who, when I was a little boy, a couple of days after Christmas, was burdened for my soul, and she put me up on her lap. And she quoted me John 3:16, and she told me the gospel story about how Jesus went to the cross to die for my sins. She was the first person to introduce me to Jesus Christ. Whoever the person was that introduced you to Christ will be special to you for all of your life. And whenever you realize that it was your mother that introduced you to Christ, it makes her even all the more special. Secondly, about my mom, and this may almost sound superfluous, but nowadays it's not. My mother really, truly loved me. She loved me. As some of you know, I think I've told this part of the story before. I was never supposed to have been born. And there's a lot of people around that wish I hadn't. My mom had health problems from her early years. And in the prime of her childbearing years, she was not able to conceive a child. The doctor had told her several times that she would never have a child. And she was resigned to that statement. When my dad got saved after a life of alcoholism, which many of you know that story, we have his life testimony on the table that we give away free of charge. And this week we've had a lot of people that have requested my dad's free life story testimony that we'll send to anybody that wants it. If you have somebody that you know that is addicted to alcohol or drugs, or a loved one of an alcoholic or a drug addict, we will be glad to send you my dad's real true life testimony CD. If you'll just give us your name and address or somebody else that you want us to send it to, we'll be glad to do that, no charge. A lot of people have done that this week, as a matter of fact. But after my dad got saved and met my mother, and they became man and wife, my dad, saved out of a terrible life of alcoholism, began praying the impossible prayer. You know, you hear about the song, The Impossible Dream. Well, my dad prayed the impossible prayer. He prayed that he would have a son. And he prayed that his son would grow up to be a preacher. Mom was not supposed to be able to have a child. But here I am, folks. At the age of 40, I was born to my mother. And I remember my mom saying to friends, as you know, when I was a little guy, and she would be recounting how she was able to conceive after being told that she would never be able to conceive. And how that she was the youngest of several siblings. So growing up, she was never around small children. She was the smallest child, and she was several years younger than her nearest sibling. So she grew up being the youngest and was never really around small children growing up. And then never able to have a child through the younger years of womanhood. So she had now lived to this point in life without having a child. and without really being around small children as a young lady. And I remember her telling her friends, and at the time, you know, you and you're a kid, you don't really take in these things. But I've thought about it a lot later. She would say to her friend, you know, when I first became pregnant with Charles, she's the only one that calls me that. Don't get any ideas. She said, I wonder if I will love him. That was a question she had. Well, she didn't have to worry about it because she loved her little boy. Boy, did she love me. I grew up knowing that my dad and my mom loved me. And I hope that when your children are still home and sitting at your table and sleeping under your roof, mom and dad, if you don't do anything else, be sure your children know you love them. Be sure they know you love them. Mom convinced me, Dad did too, that they loved me. She really did. The next thing about my mom that maybe you may not know is, for the most part, my mother is the one who raised me. My dad was a welder by trade, and he worked at a couple of different large companies. One was the Alice Chalmers Company. The other was the New York Bloor Company. He was a master welder, as good at his trade as any man I've ever seen. When Dad retired from the New York Bloor Company, the owner of the company said at his retirement, Ed, if I had 50 welders like you, I could lay the entire rest of the plant off. Dad was an incredible welder. He helped to weld the arch in St. Louis. He worked on several of the major buildings around the country that are now part of our landscape. He was just in high demand as a welder. As a welder, he chose to work the second shift from 3 to midnight. That was his choice. Later in life, I was a man and had my own children and my own family, and Dad apologized to me for that one. He said, I was very selfish. I didn't have to work the second shift. I chose to work it. Dad hated to get up with an alarm clock. So I get it, honestly. Don't bother me. And he chose to work the second shift. He was a night owl. I remember sometimes he'd come in from work about 12:30, a quarter to 1, and he'd shave and shower and eat and fix himself something to eat and read the newspaper. And sometimes when I got older especially, I would wake up when he got home and I would get up with him, and that's whenever he taught me the books of the Bible and all that kind of stuff in the wee mornings of the hour. But working the shift that he did, I would come home from school and he would go to work. I mean, I'd get up and go to school. He was in bed. I'd come home from school. He'd go to work. So I during the weekdays, I said hi and bye. It was about all I got a chance to see to Dad during the daytime, if that. So it was Mom that raised me. Mom was the one that was with me every night. She is the one that was there for me. She's the one that that didn't just feed me and all that kind of thing, but she was the one I talked with. She was the one that I fellowshipped with. She's the one that, you know, taught me life lessons and you know, all these things that you would do in the evening with a parent. And being raised as a, an only child. I know that's another part of my problem. You know, there was no one else to talk to but my mom. We did not have television when I was growing up. Can you believe that? We didn't get television in our house until I was up in my teens. The only time that I got to see television was my friend, about a block or so away. His dad owned a sporting goods store, so he was a rich guy. So they had television in their house. So on Saturday morning, I would get up early and I would run to Johnny's house, and I'd spend all morning and most of the afternoon watching cartoons over at Johnny's house. And then we'd eat lunch, then we'd go out and play all day. But I mean, that was the only time I got to see television. So my only television experience growing up was Saturday morning cartoons. We did not own a television until much later. So she raised me. And Mom and I became pretty close. And I just want to say this before I get too much further into this. I'm honoring my mother today, but I also want to note that Sarah and Chris and Tim had as great a mother as ever walked this earth. There could not ever be a greater mother than Connie was to our three children. And you three, I'm sure you know how wonderful your mother is, but you will not really know how wonderful your mother is until she's gone. And so I encourage you to do everything you can to let your mother know how much you love her now while you have the opportunity to do so. I wish I had done more of that after I became an adult. We get busy with our own families, our work, our own lives, and we take our parents for granted. And we don't let them know enough or as much as we should how important they are and how much we appreciate them. My mom was a professional seamstress and a bookkeeper. She was expert in both of those occupations. When I was at home, she never worked full-time, she would only work part-time so that she could be there when I was there. But she was an outstanding seamstress. She worked professionally in that trade. And then later, she was a professional bookkeeper at a large business there in our city. My mom was a meticulous housekeeper and a very good cook. I'm glad I had a mom that knew how to cook. I can still taste some of her meals. To show you how much of a housekeeper she was, when she found out that I was engaged, or that I had chosen the one that I was going to marry, the first thing she asked me, is she a good housekeeper? How do I know? I just said, oh yeah, Mom, I'm sure she is. Well, that was a safe bet. But that was my mom. My mom read the Bible to me, I guess just about every day. She would pick one of the Bible stories especially that she liked, and she would read me the story, and then she would talk to me about what it meant. And as a young man, how I can relate to that and what it should mean to me today, and that kind of a thing. She loved to read the Bible to me, and she also played the piano. She wasn't that accomplished, but she could play the piano. She loved to sing, and she would play the piano and sing Christian hymns to me. She filled in at the church as a pianist whenever there would be a gap in that area. And she was very musically gifted. She loved to sing. She always sang in the choir at church if they had one. And she would sing at home, and she would often sing while she was doing the dishes. I can still remember her singing around the house. I think I must have got my musical ability from her. I never knew a dad as being musical, but Mom definitely was. And the music, like, I mean, I started playing instruments when I was young, and played all the way through high school, and excelled in the instruments that I chose. And I know I got that talent and that love for music from my mother. So she'd read the Bible and sing to me on a regular basis. Something else about my mom I want you to know is that she prayed for me, and she never lost faith in me. That's important. I'm not sure how my life would have been different had she not done that. When I got into my mid-teen years, I got away from God. I went into a life that I'm not now proud of looking back. I got in with bad company, and I did bad things. I had my car from I had a car of my own from the time I was 16, and I was independent in that way, and Dad let me be independent in that way. There's good and bad in that. There was good in that. I had to grow up in some ways quite a bit. When you are independent behind a wheel, there are some things you can't afford to do, and you better learn those lessons quick, or you're going to make a big mistake and be in trouble. And I had to learn some of those lessons quickly, and so that was a good thing. The bad thing was, it gave me the freedom to go places and be places where I shouldn't have been, and so forth. But I always was independent in my transportation from the time I was able to get a driver's license at the age of 16. So when I got away from the Lord, and of course, Mom and Dad knew that I wasn't, even though I tried to keep a lot of the things I was doing from them, and I'm sure I did keep some of it from them, they knew enough to know that I wasn't doing what I should be doing. I certainly wasn't thinking about what the Lord's will was at that point, and I was not heading in a good direction. And I know that Mom prayed for me, and I know that she never lost faith in me, because more than one time I would come in late at night or early in the morning when Mom would normally be asleep, and I would hear a voice back in the bedroom as I would trying to quietly come into the house. And I would stop and listen, what am I hearing? And what I was hearing was my mom on her knees praying for me. And I would stand by the door for a couple of moments, and I would listen to her weep and pray for me. Now, Alan sang that song a minute ago, a beautiful song about the mother praying for the children. And I got to tell you, if listening to your mom, your Christian mom, on her knees with tears praying for you, if that doesn't move your heart, you don't have a heart. And I remember the conviction of my heart hearing my mom pray. But not only did she pray, she never lost faith in me. And that's critically important. Some parents, unfortunately, when their children go into error, they write them off. Have nothing more to do with them. More or less disown them. Of course, we know there's a lot of religions that teach that. If you leave one religion and go into another religion, you are cast off of the family. You, like even in the play we saw this weekend, taken from the play in the film Fiddler on the Roof. I no longer have a daughter. She doesn't exist. She married outside of our faith. The daughter is dead to me. And there's a lot of parents that have that attitude. They also have the attitude that if a child, some Christian parents, unfortunately, can be very harsh in the way they are not able to understand the waywardness of their children. I'm not sure how old you were when you woke up. I don't mean politically. I mean in terms of life. Basic maturity. We have today, 50, 60, and 70-year-old men who have never grown up. So it's not a matter of your age biologically. It's a matter of your maturity inwardly. And I'm not sure when you woke up and you realized that there is a serious side to life and there are consequences and responsibilities and duties, and there are such a thing as compassion and forgiveness and love and mercy and understanding. And, you know, I don't know when you were that all that kind of dawned on you. If you were like most of us, it took you a while. And about the time you figure it out, you wish you could go back and do it all over again, but you can't because it's over. So they don't. Everything is black and white with these people. Everything is right and wrong, and there is right and wrong. I'm not saying there's not. But we're talking about a parent-child relationship. We're talking about loving your children and expressing confidence and faith in them, even when they're not doing what you think they should be doing. And I remember Mom would come to me often during my years of rebellion. And of course, she didn't know that I was standing outside the door once in a while listening to her pray. So she would say, "Charles, I just want you to know, I don't believe for one minute that you're going to stay away from God forever. I don't believe for one minute that you're not going to come to your senses and you're not going to have a change in your life. I don't believe for a minute. I have total faith in God and in you that you are going to make something of yourself. You're going to be something special in the eyes of God. You're going to do something special in the eyes of God. And I am not giving up on you, and I have faith in you and faith in God, and I believe that with all of my heart. And she would tell me that more than once. She never lost faith in me. My mother always listened to my problems and my confessions. And I did have things needed to be confessed. And I didn't want to confess them to Dad. I just didn't. But I could go to Mom, and I could tell her my deepest problems. I could tell her when I had, I'm talking about as a little boy, when I had sinned. I didn't tell her the stuff I was doing when I was older. But when I was a little guy, I'd tell her the things I had done that were wrong. I would confide in her. And she was always understanding, compassionate, never judgmental. And she would tell me straight out when I needed to be told something was right or wrong. Don't get me wrong. She was not a pushover. I couldn't go to Mom and try to finagle her to get me to do something, you know, when Dad had said, don't, you know, like how some kids do. You know, Mom says no, so they go to Dad, and Dad says no, so they go to Mom. Well, Mom said it's, I knew I couldn't do that. And that was the biggest waste of time on L Street. It just wouldn't work. I never tried that. Mom was not the disciplinarian per se in the home. Dad was. Dad had this board that was about 12 feet long and about 6 foot wide, and it had holes in it. And he'd take me down to the, you know, it used to be a chicken coop that we didn't have chickens, and all we had were snakes, and so we called it the snake house. He'd take me down to the snake house, and he would apply the Board of Education to the seat of knowledge. So Dad was basically the disciplinarian, but Mom could be also. If things were more immediate in nature, Mom didn't wield the board. We had two cherry trees in our yard, and I've never seen anybody that was able to break off the limb of a cherry tree and strip the branch bare and lay it to my backside. And she wasn't really particularly accurate in terms of exactly where it hit. As long as it hit flesh, that's the only thing she cared about. And she was as fast as I was. I couldn't outrun her. So she had her times when discipline was definitely part of her nature. But when I would come to her with problems and a contrite heart, oh boy, she was so loving, so merciful, so compassionate. If Mom had not contracted Alzheimer's disease when she was old, she probably would have lived to be 100. She was in excellent health. Her sisters and other siblings all lived, the whole family lived up into their 90s, and one of them made it to 100, if I'm not mistaken. And they were just healthy people, and they lived a long time. My dad's side of the family did too. So I have longevity on both sides, to the chagrin of a lot of these people that would like to see me gone. So she was so healthy and she was so strong. But about the time that Dad passed away, she came down with Alzheimer's. And so the last 4 to 5 years of her life were under the influence of that disease. So any of you that have loved ones that are suffering from dementia or Alzheimer's, I truly understand what you're going through. I know what that's like. We cared for her as long as we could, Connie and I. And then when it got to a point that we were no longer able to do it, I went and found a private facility. I refused to put her in a state facility and paid for it out of our own pocket to keep her there for as long as the care was needed. And, of course, at that point, it's 24-hour care. I remember going and visiting her often, and I watched her progress through the various stages of Alzheimer's. I would not wish that disease on my worst enemy. It's horrible beyond description. I think it's more horrific for the family, really, than it is the victim. The victim loses their reasoning skills and their mental faculties, and they don't even realize what's happened to them when it gets to the latter stages anyway. Whereas the family sees it all the way through, and I watched my mom go through that, and it was just gut-wrenching. I remember the first time when I was visiting her, and we were talking, and we'd been talking for a little while, and then she looked at me with those glassy eyes, and this is an exact quote. I'll never forget it. She said, "Do I know you? Do I know you?" Her only son. Her only child. "Do I know you?" That'll do something for you, brother. When you realize you only have one mother, and this mother loves me more than, in her own way, more than any other person in the entire world will ever love me. No one, if I live to be 100, will ever love me like this woman loves me. And she doesn't even know who I am. And she suffered with that for several years and then passed away. My wife and I were with my mom, thank you, Lord, when she passed. Unlike my dad, and I told the story when the doctor said he had X number of months to live and I left to go back to work and minister to people that I later discovered could have cared less whether I ministered to them or not. But I felt I had a duty to go back and minister to them. So I left my dad on his deathbed. I asked, how much time does dad have? If I go back I'm gone for a few days, and the doctor, of course, doctors don't know. It's all a guessing game with them. And he told me, you know, it could be days, it could be months, you know, no one knows. He said, well, I think you've got a month or so. I didn't have a month. Went home, preached to people that didn't care, and then drove back, and the night, as I'm driving back, the night before I got there, the next day, Dad went to heaven. And so when I got there, Dad had already gone. I missed that. But the Lord was gracious. Connie and I were with Mom when she passed away, in her room, at her side, the very moment that she passed. And I'm very thankful that God gave us that opportunity. And then I only have one more point to this. Life was different when I was a boy from what we know now. We didn't have computers. We didn't have cell phones. We didn't have Wii's. We had nothing electronic. I had a radio. I did have when I got a little bit older, 10, 11, 12, I had a transistor radio. You kids don't even know what a transistor radio is. We had a transistor radio. And Dad got me one that was a really, really expensive one. I mean, it was a good one because it had both AM and FM. Wow. You don't want to have FM on your transistor. If you had AM, yeah. So that's the only thing we knew. We spent, when we weren't doing homework and chores, yeah, we did chores. When we weren't working and doing our chores or we weren't doing homework, as far as kids go, we were outside playing. And it didn't matter if it was 75 degrees or whether it was 20 below zero. We were outside playing. We did everything outside. And something else about my mom that I think it maybe just give you a little bit more insight to her. All the kids in the neighborhood would come to my house to play. I mean, if they were going to go to a house to play, it would be my house, be my yard. Mom would cook a lunch, whatever it was, for all the kids. And it was just a place that the neighborhood came to. My house became the hub of the kids playing together. We'd play kick the can outside of our front of our house, and we'd play roller derby or going around our house, and we'd play, you know, war and cowboys and Indians, and we had apple. I had apple trees in our yard. Maybe that's why they came. We had apple trees, and we'd have apple fights, and we had BB gun fights, and how stupid looking back on that. So we just did a lot around our house. And when we weren't at our house, you know, we were wherever. We were all over the neighborhood. All over the neighborhood. And I don't know how she did it. To this day, I don't know how she did it. But when it was time for me to come home, either for lunch or for supper, and I was out playing somewhere in the neighborhood, my mother would walk outside the house and she would call my name. I don't care where I was in the neighborhood, I heard her. I couldn't do that. How could you do that? Stand at 308 L Street and be heard over at 121 4th Street. But I always heard her. She was the one who called me home. Mom was waiting on me. And the little boy in me comes out, and I think, one day Mama's going to call me home. One day Mama's going to call me home. I know everybody can't have a wonderful Christian mom. Not everybody can have a wonderful Christian dad. Not everybody can be raised with an intact, loving family. I understand that. God loves us all just as much. He puts us in the family where we needed to be so that He can make us who we are. And so a lot of the things that people have had to go through in the homes that were less than perfect, God used that in their lives to help make them who and what they are. And it was painful. My wife did not grow up in an intact Christian home. My wife did not have a Christian father. She had a drunkard father who made life at their house a veritable hell. But Connie did have a wonderful mother and grandmother, and many of you that have had less than perfect upbringings, you are who you are in part because God used that imperfect beginning of your life to help make you who you are today. But the Bible tells me that I am to honor my mother and my father. And so on this Mother's Day, the 19th Mother's Day after my mom passed, I'm hopefully accomplishing somewhat what is my duty to do and tell you and all of you about my wonderful mother. And I am absolutely confident that I would not be the man I am today without her. I honor my mom today. And I hope each of you, to the extent that you are able to do so, will honor your mom as well. Let's stand for a word of prayer.